Welcome, everyone, to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. I can honestly say I didn't expect to be here at this time on this date. This is not a part of the plan. But here we are, and here we go. One of the words, couple of the words that I've heard more than I've ever heard entirely in my life, and Sean and I referred to this a moment ago, fluid and unprecedented. We are in fluid and unprecedented times. And as much as you say that, as much as you think about it, it sure doesn't make it feel any better. How do you get used to uncertainty? How do you make uncertainty a normal part of your life? We all tend to fall back on it. I myself am a small business owner. If you're a fan of the show, you've heard me mention this a number of times. Most of my work is generated. Most of my revenue is generated. Getting on airplanes, you can hear the crisis coming, getting on airplanes, going to conferences, and teaching through keynotes, through seminars, through workshops, as well as offering marketing products to my clients. Two Mondays ago, I got a call saying, essentially, Cam, the work that we had you scheduled for in March, we're eliminating. Two Tuesdays ago, the next day, I got emails saying, Cam, all the work that we had for you from multiple different clients is over. We might push some of it to later in the year, depending on how things go. And on Wednesday, the same thing happened for May. Suddenly, my entire spring was wide open. Revenue had ended. And now I have people contacting me saying, June is on the bubble. We're not really sure what's going to happen. Fluid. Unprecedented. So I had little to do, and I didn't know how to fill the time. And knowing myself and the people that know me know I need a purpose. I need something to motivate myself, as I'm sure so many of you do too. And all of a sudden, the thing that I'd been paid to do, the reason for being, my existential purpose for that I did to pay the bills and keep my family alive was gone. Real concern for my work and a new concern, which I saw as a release from Fox News this morning, and I chose not to read the article only after looking at the headlines. Will face-to-face business ever return? Will it ever look the same again? So even when the crisis is over, will I be able to come back? You can begin to see, and I know so many of you out there are concerned with these same things, where this concern comes from, and it's changing all the time. So I reached out to Sean late last week and said, hey, I think I can help small business. Give me an opportunity. Let's find experts that can help people make decisions that will keep their businesses and themselves alive. And I'm not talking metaphorically, alive for the next little while. How are we going to do this? And the next little while could be 2 months, 1 month. It could be 6 months to a year. Fluid, unprecedented. We simply don't know. Thankfully, Sean came back and said, I think this is a concern. I'm getting these calls myself. You're on. Plan on being here Tuesday. So here I am. And after having tried to get people on the line, even this morning, lined up for conversations, even this morning, one of the guests that I had lined up who I was going to talk to him about, how do we sanitize the workplace? What are the steps necessary to sanitize the workplace so that the employees know that if they come to work, the place is clean? So as the customers know that they come to do business with you, the place is clean. He reaches out and says, due to new CDC revelations, there is thought that this coronavirus may exist for 17 days or more. After the place has been cleaned. We don't really know how to clean it, Cam. I'm not sure I can put myself on the air and tell people what to do when we are not really sure what to do about it. I can't be on your show today. Reach out to me in a little while once we have this thing figured out. And suddenly, it's a fluid situation, and I'm scrambling to find somebody to help us out today. So let me tell you what you can expect from this special edition of What's Working going forward. Here's my commitment to you. First, we are going to look currently and forward. We're going to try to figure out where we are now and what we can do going forward. We're going to look at very specific action items for small business owners and you and me as individuals to take to provide value to our workplace, to provide value to our employees, and to our customers. We're going to look at things that may seem rudimentary, but in a heady economy with low unemployment, we tend to lose sight of. We're going to look at the bare bones stuff that makes your business and my business tick. And if something bad happens to you in your business, it's not going to be because you lacked information from the show. My goal is to give you content with which you can use to make decisions. It's to take calls. It's to find experts that are going to give us true, deep insight into what's going on out there. A couple weeks ago, I had on the show a guy named Russell Fountain. Russell owns a global disaster solutions. They go into places that are hit by hurricanes, by fires, by floods. He may not have a lot of expertise in pandemics. I don't think anybody does. But he did say something a couple of weeks ago that struck me. 40% of businesses go out of business after a disaster strikes. 23% more go out of business within 2 years after that. Why? That's the question for Russell, and we'll have him on Thursday. Why do they go out of business? Are there decisions that a business owner can make to not put themselves in that category? These are the type of people we're looking for. Stephanie Constantine is an HR consultant locally to Mobile. Our question to her in a couple of weeks: Stephanie, how do I manage a remote workforce? We've never operated this before. How do people manage remote workforces? How do we work with them? How do we keep an eye on them? How do we supervise? How do we make sure they're getting the work done? A conversation we've not had before. We'll certainly have people for the Mobile Chamber on, talking about what the resources are for small business. And on Thursday, this coming Thursday, we're going to have Terry Harbin, who's the president of Bancorp South. He's going to talk to us about banking options in times of crisis. What happens if I can't repay my loan? How do I look at this home equity line of credit differently if I have it now? All these factors that may not have been relevant are now suddenly relevant for you and me. It's about staying alive, folks. It's about moving forward, figuring out solutions, staying alive, making the best of the information we have, and using the resources we have. I want to take your calls. I want to talk to you. I want to hear what your concerns are. I want to hear what your questions are so that I can find the experts that can answer those questions. This show, just like everything else out there, is fluid. It's unprecedented. I never thought I'd be here, but if I can find a way to help, I'm going to do it. And maybe this show is it. When we come back from this first break, I'm going to have Emily Killian on the line. Emily is an attorney with Burr & Foreman. She has expertise with workplace issues, wage and hour claims, things of that nature. Emily is going to talk to us about the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. This is a cumbersome name for the legislation that's passed recently that'll help us understand paid sick leave, that'll help us understand how we apply for this type of stuff. Will help us understand what we can offer our employees and what they might can expect from us going forward. She has the expertise, and she's created a remarkable document full of content to help people like you and me out, and I'll tell you how to get a copy of that document when we get Emily on the line. Folks, you're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston, and I know what's working right now is me. I'm trying to help you figure out a way to get through this, and we're going to do this together. We'll be right back. Listening to the fluid and unprecedented episode of What's Working with Cam Marston. On the line with me is Emily Killian. Emily is an attorney with Burr & Foreman. She's her expertise, workplace issues, wage and hour claims, workers' comp, etc. Emily, thank you so much for your time and this last-minute request. Welcome to What's Working.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Emily, understanding what your expertise is, I suspect you're taking calls, you're fielding calls from a lot of clients of yours about, how do they behave? How do they react to this? What are the rules in the new normal? Tell me what you're hearing from your clients. What are their greatest concerns right now?
Cam, you hit the nail on the head. As you can imagine, this is a bit of uncharted territory that we're in right now. We're getting questions left and right from employers vary widely, but from workers' compensation questions of, can I be sued if someone contracts coronavirus in the workplace? Issues related to telework and how that works with wage and hour questions. Questions under new federal legislation that we're seeing enacted on March 18th that expands the typical Family Medical Leave Act and also offers paid sick leave. So really, Cam, we're seeing questions across the board as we assist people in dealing with really what is uncertain and really trying times for employers across the board.
Give me the one that's been asked the most, and let's dig into that one. One that'll have the greatest relevance to the greatest number of listeners, whether they're an employee or an employer. What is the question being asked, and what is the situation?
The biggest question we're seeing right now is questions related to new federal legislation that's titled the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. And this is a new legislation that just passed Congress last week and was signed into law by President Trump on March 18th. So really hot off the press, directly in response to this coronavirus crisis. And Cam, the reason we're getting so many questions about this is because typically with federal legislation, there's a lot of employers that are not covered. They're exempted for some reason. Either they have too few employees, too many employees, lots of different considerations. But the one interesting thing about this Paid Sick Leave Act that is part of this coronavirus response package is that it applies across the board to all employers. And it really puts some pretty onerous burdens on employers that have fewer than 500 employees that they have to provide paid sick leave. So in terms of small businesses that are used to being exempted from certain types of federal legislation, if you have less than 500 employees, which is really a large number and consists of you know, many of the clients that we have, they are on the hook to provide paid sick leave due to some certain qualifying circumstances that we're seeing as a result of coronavirus.
Is there a way that these small businesses, let me interrupt you, Emily, I want to stay to tactics, I want to stay to actionable items. So the small business owners with less than 500 employees, incidentally, I pulled this information prior, only 0.3% of all businesses in the U.S., 0.3% are 500 employees or over. So the vast majority, 97%, are applicable here. They are mandated to offer paid sick leave. Are there did I get that right?
You have that right, Cam. And yeah, it's super broad and is going to apply to really most employers. Like you said, I think that's a great statistic.
So what is the employer to do if an employee comes in and says, listen, I know this is now my right due to this new legislation. I have fears about this. I'm feeling bad, whatever the situation may be. The employer now having to offer this, did I read somewhere that the payment that they make to these people is reimbursable? Is that correct?
You have that right, Cam. And I want to break down a couple of different points in the question. But right, to your point about the credit, there are provisions that will allow employers to claw back some of these payments that are made under this Paid Sick Leave Act that would allow the employer to seek back a credit for those amounts paid in the amounts of Social Security tax that they owe. And, you know, like all things with the IRS, it's very complicated. Of course, these agencies are still trying to catch up with these laws, too. So we don't have super specific guidance about how that process will work, but we do have the general sense that yes, employers can expect to receive some type of credit for these payments that they're making, but what that looks like in practical form, we don't really know yet.
Have you seen a document that an employer would have to fill out regarding this yet, or is that way too premature? They've just said this is the rule. We'll figure out how to reimburse you through Social Security tax credits down the road.
That's exactly what they've done, Cam, and you know, to the detriment of employees and employers, but I think what we have heard from the Secretary of Labor is that we should expect to receive additional guidance and regulations that construe this this act that's been passed in the coming days. So I expect that a form like that will certainly exist at a point in time, but it does not exist now as far as I am aware.
So
I did want to go back to one thing that you mentioned before, because you had asked what an employee and an employer should do if someone says, I want this paid sick leave.
Yeah.
Is it okay if I talk about that?
Please. This is very relevant.
Okay. So one thing the employer needs to keep in mind is the employer does still maintain some control over this process. These types of things are typically rife with abuse from employees. And of course, there's very what are these circumstances? And truthful employees, you know, 99% of the time, but we all know that there's situations that, that could be abused. So we're advising employers to create documentation that employees can fill out to seek this paid leave so that the employer can verify what qualifying circumstance it is that they are asking for. For example, an employee technically under this Paid Leave Act would be entitled to monies back if their child is out of school, which we know the public school systems are closed at least now until April 6th, and I think we might be looking at indefinitely for the rest of the school year. So, you know, some of this, we're going to have to create some documentation to say, we need some verification on why it is that you need this, what are the different circumstances, and then go from there. So, that is one thing that I think employers need to keep in mind is, you know, don't lose sight of the fact that, you know, we still do control this process. And even though we're kind of all a little bit flying by the seat of our pants with the newness of some of these regulations, we are still able to hold employees to standards and documentation and truthfulness of all of that in moving forward with the process.
It's always been the case that I can remember that documenting whatever it may be is always the best plan, but it seems like going forward, particularly without really detailed written rules, with no clear information on how the employer will be paid back when or anything like that, it is more important than necessary. Is that about right?
I would say it's necessary and extremely important.
Yeah, no kidding. Is there a dollar amount that, I mean, the employers are going to have to pay for this paid sick leave out of cash flow, I assume. There's not a pool of money that the federal government's made available. It's coming out of their cash flow to be, I guess, reimbursed. You told me that. It's coming back in Social Security tax credits. Is there anything the employer needs to be considering about how to pay for this that I'm unaware of if the employee takes this new sick leave, takes on this new sick leave?
Sure. So there are some caps on the amount that the employer is required to pay in a sick leave. So, for example, there's a couple different caps for different qualifying circumstances, but the most an employer is looking at paying under this paid sick leave is a cap of $511 per day. Again, that's per employee, or $5,110 in aggregate per employee. So there is a limit. So an employer could go in and really kind of guesstimate a worst case scenario on some of the paid sick leave. But the other thing too, Cam, is that we're seeing the Small Business Administration has issued some economic disaster loan procedures that I'm less familiar with some of the financial service aspects of this, but I do know that the SBA, obviously given the circumstances that small businesses are finding themselves in and the turmoil really that's going to result and already is resulting from this COVID crisis, there are, I think, financial remedies for small businesses out there with different lenders that, you know, are recognizing the dire need that exists currently. So I would encourage any small business to really look at any opportunities like that.
It's the goal of the federal government, as I understand it, to keep these people on the payroll rather than dismissing them or cutting them loose, that the recovery will depend on an already full payroll with people continuing to get paid. Perhaps that was one of the lessons of 2008, is we keep the payrolls full and we teach people or give people the resources to do so. Is that what you're guessing the motivation behind some of these rules are? Is that the lens through which to look at this?
I think so. I think at least with regard to this Families First Coronavirus Response Act, I think it leans more employee-friendly than employer-friendly. But I think that we're going to see a lot of stimulus and efforts to save some of these small businesses that are going to really feel the effects of a lot of these new requirements and really a lack of resources available to them. But my hope is that, you know, the concern is that whenever we're through this, and I say when we're through it, not if we're through it, but when this ends, we're able to really hit the ground running. And I do hope that's the motivation for a lot of our legislatures.
Emily, let me ask you a less technical question. As you're speaking to these employers, is their tone one of how can I help my people, or is it how can I save my business? Is there... What is your judgment on the attitude of the people who have influence over the livelihood of their employees right now? And unfortunately, you got about 35 seconds to answer this question.
Look, you know, I think it's a balance. I mean, I think the good news about a virus like this is that we're all affected. We're all human beings. I think what we're hearing from employers is a strong need to balance their respect for the health and safety of their employees with the fact that they're having to navigate how to remain operational and generate revenue. So I say there's a balance there, but I think we're all dealing with this, so I think everyone understands the severity of the situation across the board.
Folks, Emily has made a wonderful document available to anyone that wants it on the greatest amount of resources that I've seen that Burr and Foreman has organized. This is not their content. They've organized it for us. And if you want a copy of this document, and it includes things about OSHA's guidelines on how to prepare for this stuff, State Department guidelines on travel, there's 15 bullet points here of information out here. Again, it's the most comprehensive document I've seen. If you want a copy of it, do this. Text What's Working, there are no apostrophes in that, What's Working to 44222 and follow the prompts. Again, that's What's Working to 44222. Emily, I appreciate your information. If you don't mind, we'd love to have you as a go-to resource going forward about any of these changes or updates that may go on out there. Are you willing to help us out?
Absolutely, Cam. We know these are trying times, and we are here to assist across the board, labor and employment, cybersecurity, financial services, whatever any employer needs.
That's awesome, Emily. We appreciate it. Folks, Emily Killian is an attorney with Burr and Foreman. She has a remarkable expertise on the workplace and is doing her best to keep up with the rapid changes coming around. We'll be right back after these breaks with jobs that are available right now. What's Working today at a new time, and I'm glad to be here. However, the traditional What's Working show hasn't gone anywhere either. We do a little bit of questions of business owners and their stories that have created their business, and undoubtedly all of them will have a new story going forward. Just like everybody has a 2008 story, people will now have a COVID-19 story. But tomorrow night at 6 p.m., I'm going to have John Fitzgerald of Saunders Yacht Works on the show. They have a remarkably unique tool. It's a 150-ton boat lift that can pick up a yacht of 120 feet long. It's the only one on the Gulf Coast between Tampa and the Corpus Christi area, and he ropes in big boats from within that range to come get serviced at his boatyard using that 150-ton lift, 120 feet long yachts. I don't have one, so I've never used his lift, and I couldn't imagine what it would take for me to have one. Anyway, we're back. You're listening to What's Working, and on the line is a buddy who posted the right thing at the right time today due to the fluid and unprecedented nature of today. Tucker Frazier is the director of Gulf Coast Operations with People Flex Staffing. Tucker, you there? Welcome to What's Working.
Hey, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Tucker, I know it's a crazy time, and as you and I were speaking earlier today, it would be a crazy time to start a business. But if I understood it correctly, you started one 2 days ago that is already kicking it due to the unprecedented nature of the time. Tell me a little bit about that, Tucker. What's going on out there?
Yeah, thanks, Cam. So we did, and it is something that we've had planned for quite a while, well over a year, in fact. So our timing seems a little bit off, but it's actually worked out pretty well for us so far. So I'm in the employment industry, and I've actually worked for a company called iTax Solutions for the past 10 years. And we started a new business called PeopleFlex to focus on industrial staffing just 2 days ago.
And there are jobs to be had, and I know now there are people to be had. Tucker, I'm going to interrupt you a little bit. I saw a list of statistics that came out this morning on the Daily Brew, the Morning Brew, And it reads this: the appetite for staple goods, and delivery so strong that people are hiring over 600,000 workers right now. And they gave some statistics. For example, Walmart is hiring 150,000 people who will undergo a 24-hour hiring process. Amazon is looking for 100,000 delivery and logistics workers. CVS and Dollar General are each looking for 50,000 people. Papa John's and Domino's are looking for 30,000, and Kroger looking for 10,000. And I've reached out to Publix because I've got some teenage kids at home that, frankly, should be doing more than staring at their phone and playing Xbox. And Publix is looking for people. Tell me, from your point of view, Tucker, who's hiring, what type of industries are they, and what type of skills are they looking for right now?
So, yeah, so just like from reading the national articles with the Amazons and the Walmarts and the large grocery chains, you know, we're seeing some of the same things on a local level, you know, and people may not think of that, but we have, you know, some local grocery stores in Mobile, you know, some of the local, you know, fast food chains, for example, you know, a lot of those are locally owned franchises, and although the restaurant business is down across the board, you know, the quick service restaurants are busy and they're hiring. So there's definitely a need in those industries, as well as you get into sanitation, janitorial services. That's a huge industry right now, as people are looking to clean their facilities on a constant basis due to the COVID-19.
Are these companies ones that are, let's say this, are these companies that are hiring thriving right now and they need additional people because they're thriving, like Amazon, like, let's say, Publix, which is picked clean every time I go in there? Or are they places that are trying to play defense? Do you have a sense of the reason that they're hiring?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of them are hiring directly because of the situation at hand. You know, they need additional personnel immediately, and are turning to, you know, people from the service industry, for example, people wait staff who have been laid off are the perfect employee for these people to get in. They're immediately available, you know, and it's a way for them to get in and earn money, you know, more money than they would filing for an unemployment claim.
So are the people that are looking for jobs right now, those that are talking to you, the job seekers, are they looking for a patch? Are they saying, Tucker, I need a job for 6 weeks until this thing comes back? Or, Tucker, I'll be there as long as I need to. Do you have a sense of whether the job seeker has a horizon set for how long they need this new type of work?
You know, we're seeing both. I think the majority of them are looking for a quick fix, a job to get into immediately, so because they're losing income. But you know, a lot of people we're talking to, Cam, are seeing this as an opportunity to change careers. You know, they may have you know, a college degree, for example, or some training in other fields. And they've had a great job at a restaurant for the past couple of years, and they're seeing this as an opportunity to find something new and pursue a different path.
Oh, man, speaking straight to my heart. I don't know if you heard the opening comments, but I'm in an existential crisis. What am I going to do when and if this ends? And I can relate to those people so well. One of the things, Tucker, that I talk to a lot of the people that I interview for the show about is what types of skilled labor are they looking for the most? There's got to be new skilled labor entering the labor pool right now that employers have had hard time finding. Do you have any sense of what the top of that list may be? What is the skilled labor that most employers have been looking for that now may be available?
Well, we're seeing in a couple of different areas. You know, a lot of people are laying people off, unfortunately. But you know, as a lot of these companies are moving to a work from home model, some at such a large scale that it's almost unmanageable, we're seeing an uptick in information technology positions, for example. You know, these IT departments at companies, or maybe some companies don't even have an IT department, need help immediately to help transition their workforce to a remote workforce. So that's a highly in demand skill right now. And then kind of jumping over into you know, the manufacturing and janitorial, you know, the product still has to move, Cam. All of these grocery stores are so busy. So the logistics industry is really really big right now. You know, local logistics companies, trucking companies are still needing to move product and move product quickly. So anybody with, you know, skilled in warehouse and, you know, truck drivers and things like that are really in demand as well.
I'm curious if employers are really searching deep into resumes right now. I know, let's say 3 weeks ago, when everything was different, employers needed people so badly that they're willing to overlook some blemishes on the resume. I suspect today, through the opposite reason, these employers that you're talking about are not really concerned with blemishes on the resume. They're looking for warm bodies. Am I right about that, or is that oversimplifying things?
No, that's absolutely right. You know, especially we've got some clients that are doing some sanitation, janitorial work right now, and they are looking for people who are reliable. And, you know, and show up and have a good head on their shoulders and are reliable and are willing to work. And, you know, that they're not concerned so much with your background and what you have been doing. It's more along the lines of, are you willing to work? You know, we'd love to have you now.
And it's been the case forever. I suspect when Cain and Abel or Adam and Eve got their first job, their employer wanted them honest, reliable, and trainable. And that's been the case for the longest time. Now in a new economy, I think that's still the case. In an old economy, it was still the case. Tell me this, Tucker, if somebody out there wanted to see what's available, and I'm considering this, I'm not ready to make this commitment, maybe there shouldn't be, there may already be, a clearinghouse for the broadcast range of the station of what jobs are available immediately. Are you aware of something out there right now?
It seems like most employers, you know, are reaching out. There's a couple different things. If you go online, you know, you see a lot of things through, you know, websites like Indeed.com, you know, Facebook. You know, you have your Career Builders, Monsters, all of the large job posting sites. You know, a lot of employers are reaching out to staffing businesses such as ours because they need people so quickly. It's really hard to go through their own search and find people in a timely manner. So there's a lot of different avenues. One thing I'd like to say is people really, if you need a job, you really should be proactive and go after businesses, even if you don't see a job posting. You know, not everybody's going to get hired at Amazon, for example, you know, but approach some of the local grocery stores and convenience stores that are in that sector that need people, and be proactive about presenting yourself and say, hey, I'm ready to work.
Yeah, I think many of them are like you and me, perhaps. We've been reacting, we've been treading water, just trying to figure out where to go, and the process of posting job openings hasn't landed on our radar. Someone coming through the door, presentable, with all the qualities that we need, and says, I'm ready to work, can you hire me? Maybe a blessing in disguise for this business owner out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me this, Tucker. Let's get very specific. And I'm very curious about, let's say, one of the jobs that you have available right now. Give me an example. And this is, I didn't tell you to prepare for this, but give me an example of the most recent call you had from an employer saying, I need this type of person. Who is, maybe you can't tell me the employer, but tell me what they do and what that job is.
So we have a client who's recently signed a contract to provide janitorial work, and they're sanitizing some workspaces, warehouse spaces, because of the COVID-19 virus, and I think I heard you mention earlier on the air, and it's true that it's a very fluid thing with how to clean for the virus, how effective it is, and these companies are affected by the supply chain just like everybody else. They need the right chemicals and things to clean. So there's some headaches there with those companies, but they've got the contracts. They need the personnel, and you know, the type of people they're looking for, again, are people that are willing to do that kind of work. It's not glamorous work, but it's certainly a very steady paycheck for the next probably 3 to 6 months.
And well worth exploring. There's honor in work, all work. And, Tucker, I wish you the best of luck, my friend. Thank you so much for this last-minute request. If we could be of any help on our end, let us know.
Thank you so much, Cam.
Folks, we'll be back with final comments on the show after this break. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston, and we'll be back. special thanks to Tucker Frazier and Emily Killian for being on the show today. It's such short notice. I think we're going to continue to have these guests that are going to offer some insights in what to do and what to say right now that will help us out in some way or another. Folks, as I was sitting around trying to put this into perspective, like I said, things have changed dramatically for me, and I'm not unique in that in any way. So many of you are in the boat with me. As I was trying to put this into perspective, I got back into thinking about, well, when have I felt this way before? And every morning I get up, and this is more than you want to know, and sit quietly and try to think about things. And when have I felt this way before? And I'm going to tell you a story real quick that we're going to close out on today and hopefully end up with a little bit of positivity. It was, I'm guessing, around the year, I don't know, I'm saying 2003 or 4, and I had started my own business as it exists today, or as it existed 2 weeks ago. And I was having a difficult time finding customers, frankly, and I was living dime to dime, and it was really, I was struggling. Years before, I had met a colonel in the Air Force, and he and I had become friends as we shared a workplace together, working for the same organization. And I enjoyed his counsel so much. The wisdom that he had through his training in the Air Force and through his battle in the skies over Vietnam are some of the stories that I'll never forget. And my time with him was always precious. And in this moment of crisis, of fear, I reached out to him. And I picked up the phone. I called him and I said, listen, do you have a moment? I'd like to run some business ideas by you. He was always wise counsel. In the truth, I just wanted somebody to talk to. And he agreed, of course, and we spent some time on the phone, and I finally admitted to him, I'm afraid. I'm not sure this is going to work. I'm afraid. I want it to work so badly, but all I keep thinking about are decisions that I regret in my past that may have led me to this, as well as things that I hope for in the future that I'm not sure are going to happen. And he told me the story. Cam, when I was flying, I think there were Phantoms. When I was flying Phantoms over Vietnam, I was, you know, in control of the world. I thought I was in flight school and everything. I thought I was indestructible. I was powerful. But Cam, when you hear the siren, I think is what he called it, maybe the whistle, go off in the headsets, when you realize that an enemy plane has locked on to you and that siren goes off in your headset and you realize you have moments to survive, then no amount of flight training, no amount of flight school teaches you the actions of that moment. Fear creates opportunities. Fear creates ways for you to see things differently. And obviously, he said, I was never shot down. I was never injured, but I was locked on a number of times, and I took that plane through paces that no flight instructor ever could have taken a plane through, nor no flight instructor could ever have taught me. You're afraid right now, Cam. You feel fear. And in that fear, there's an opportunity. And in that opportunity is what comes next. And I remember hearing that story, and it was decades ago. And I go back to that story right now. If you're like me, uncertainty and unfamiliarity with our times today have created some amount of fear. And for us to say, man, I'm not afraid, I think you're a fool. You'd be a fool to not be afraid. You'd also be a fool to not admit it. And now's the time, at least for me, that there's so much uncertainty and so much fear that I've got to look back and say, I remember that time an opportunity was created from it. And I've got to use that memory to propel myself forward today. This broadcast, as it goes on and on, who knows how long? Could be a month. It could be a year. Sean and I don't know. But it's been created, and I've asked for it to help me figure out what's going to happen to me going forward. I know this. No amount of memory about regrets of what have happened in the past is going to help, nor pushing your thoughts forward into the future of what might could happen. What matters is the decisions we make right now, today, and in the moment that are going to help us get through this. And it's fear that's driving us. It'd be foolish to admit that it's anything but that. And it's going to be fear for a little while forward. We got to get used to it and acknowledgement for what it is. Now, as I've been sitting here, Sean has been sitting next to me on the dials and making the guests come in and out. And Sean, I'd really love to get your thoughts and insights on any of the comments that we've heard today, as well as, you know, what people may be thinking.
You know, you say fear is a driver of opportunity. I would just say fear in that case could be a change or chaos. right? Within chaos, there's opportunities for change. So some people call it fear. For me, it would be chaotic. In other words, what was scripted in a quarterly or a yearly fashion has now been torn up. That script is torn up. And you have a way to forge something new. And as long as you can realize that and keep yourself afloat, I think there are opportunities all over.
I think there are opportunities all over. And if I, and I'm telling this to myself, and I after saying what I just said, I say to this myself, if I could get out of my head about decisions made in the past or dreams about what might could happen in the future and instead focus on what's in front of me, there is an opportunity here that I'm overlooking. And everyone listening right now who can relate to my emotions, the same is true for you too. The same is true right now.
Yeah, there's. I think the problem is here in the past, we've been able to forecast, be it a natural disaster or something else, or even in economic collapse, you know that, okay, here were the issues. Let's look at 07. This is what went wrong. If those things change, then these other things will come to bear. We're dealing with something here that's a virus.
Yeah.
A virus.
Yeah.
And it's so odd to say that this is not wartime or a regular natural disaster, even though I would argue it is a natural disaster, but not like one we've seen before. This is not a failed financial policy. Economy was doing great. This is a virus.
Yeah.
And it's such an odd thing that that is what's driven this new economy.
I want to also add that I consider myself a rugged individualist, and I think a lot of people out there do. That's the American way. I did it by myself, and I put the weight on my back, and I carried the weight forward. And in times of economic fruit, we can think that way, and we can pat ourselves on the back. But folks, in times of economic collapse, in times of crisis, to define yourself as a rugged individualist is a lonely path. And now's the time we fall together to get through this type of thing. It's your community, it's your family, it's your friends, it's the guy in the office two doors down who you just pop in on and say, how you doing? That's what's going to get us through. Be afraid, it's okay. Reach out. That's even more important. You're listening to What's Working, folks. We'll have another show on Thursday. Send us your thoughts, send us your ideas, and we'll do our best to find the guests who will answer your questions. I'm Cam Marston. Talk to you Thursday.